The Christina Borgeson Show on today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Best-selling nonfiction writer Naomi Wolf has written a laser beam of a book titled The Body of Others, The New Authoritarians, COVID-19, and the War Against Humans, in which she details in sharp, unsettling terms what exactly the COVID pandemic was really about, how the agenda behind it was carried out, by whom it was carried out, and to serve whom, and what the ultimate aims of those behind it really are. Just the introduction of this book was so disturbing to me that I had to take a number of breaks to get through it. I've since read it in its entirety, and I'm relieved to say that there is light within the story. But that said, Wolf doesn't mince words about what's going on and what's at stake. The war against the virus, she writes, has really been a war waged via technologies and their masters to dissolve human culture and disempower human beings. It is a war on free thought and free speech, a war against our most fundamental beliefs, a war aimed at undoing humanity itself. We are at the point in history in which we are being reoriented to serve machines and their masters. It is no exaggeration to say that these coordinated offenses, orchestrated by government in lockstep alliance with tech and pharmaceutical companies and the dominant media, represent an evil we had never seen before in human history. Wolf's book documents the strategy and tactics used to dehumanize all of us and achieve the final goal of making us slaves to tech masters and their machines. She names names and writes about the recent successful pushbacks and how this battle has a spiritual component to it, because it is quite literally, she says, a battle for human souls. Welcome back to the show, Naomi.
Thanks so much for having me again.
So you made a point that if you want to figure out how to fight an enemy, you have to understand that enemy. In this case, you call it the enemy the tyrant. You have to figure out how they think, their psychological makeup, and then understand what that enemy is doing and how it's doing it before you can stop it. So I want to talk about each of those, but first, I'd just like you to talk about who we're dealing with.
Sure. Well, the bad actors are pretty thoroughly identified in The Bodies of Others. It's a loose alliance of the World Economic Forum, which is kind of stepping more and more prominently into the light. It's bad nonprofits like the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation and EcoHealth Alliance. It's bad tech companies like Google and Microsoft and the social media platforms, Twitter, Facebook, and so on. And it's the Chinese Communist Party. And these bad actors using pharma isn't even a primary driver, but using pharma as a weapon, really have used the opportunity presented by the pandemic to reorder our world in such a way as to make war against human civilization, human culture, human commerce.
But I want you to
worship.
Talk about their headspace. What right. They're like inside that would make them, I mean, you and I would never imagine doing what they're doing. So what is their headspace? And you also, and in that question, in your answer, talk about some of your encounters with some of these people, because I found that they were very illuminating.
Thank you. So yeah, it's kind of embarrassing to confess that part of how I understand so deeply how such a massive crime could be committed by a handful of elites against kind of everyone else in the world is that these were my former friends and colleagues. I've spent 35 or 40 years in very privileged circles, you know, graduating from Yale, Oxford, Rhodes Scholar, advisor to a president and a vice president, media darling. I mean, I kind of kept finding myself surrounded by this new kind of spectrum of global elites, global leaders who really have more allegiance to each other than any of them do to their fellow, you know, Swedes or Norwegians or Russians or Germans or, you know, Chinese or for that matter, you know, Americans. So I understood that they, you know, they're all in person perfectly pleasant people. They don't look like monsters. They don't look like goose-stepping Nazis, you know, from the movies, but they are perfectly capable of doing horrific things to suppress the free will of everyone else and to put themselves in the role of deciding everyone's future because they truly believe that they are better at making decisions than the rest of us are. And that as a result, they should be making decisions on behalf of everybody else. And the other thing is they hate risk. And they hate risk. And there's so much at stake if human beings get to have free will. They, you know, the big bet they put on countries or on industries could go south and they could lose billions of dollars. So they gravitate toward policies and outcomes and, you know, complete reworking world orders and reworking economies in such a way that they don't have to deal with risk. And the example, I give a couple of examples of this, you know, from my own experience in the bodies of others. But one example I'll never forget is the people of Greece had a referendum in 2015 to not have austerity, to not give in to the EU, you know, Germany's directive to basically shut down all their social services and have elderly, you know, Greeks live on peanuts because they had no retirement and so on. They rejected that through their parliament. And the EU was upset, but I also knew a major hedge fund guy who had put a big bet on Greece embracing austerity. And he was furious at the Greeks. And he didn't think I was at a dinner party at his house and he literally didn't think the Greeks had any right to cost him billions of dollars by, you know, choosing a different outcome. So not only was he apoplectic at the, you know, temerity of the Greeks in choosing their own future, but he, you know, a few weeks later, I was at another dinner party at his house, and the Greek politician who had been on the side of the people of Greece was now at this dinner party having completely changed position and, you know, having made friends with a stratum of wealthy people and decision makers above the level of his own nation state. So that's really dangerous. These people literally never face their fellow countrymen that they do bad things to. They have a complete sense of impunity and they really do believe, you know, and I've got a quote from a young woman who was being mentored by this hedge fund guy. She was from a poor country and she said categorically, ordinary people do, you know, are not smart enough to make decisions for themselves and that technocrats like, you know, her and her mentors should be deciding for them globally.
You know, another aspect to their headspace that I find really fascinating that you made me think about and that I wasn't aware of before is you were talking about how history now is from here on out, history is actually something very different because before history was a record of the organic human interactions among humans. And now, because of these tech people, because of them using technology and digitization, to control us algorithmically, et cetera, that history is now written inside the technology because it's the technology and the algorithms that are trying to control our behavior and outcomes. So what does that say about them as, I mean, they're organic human beings too, but they're trying, they're, just talk about that. That so shocked me when you said it, but it was such a brilliant insight.
Thank you. Can you give me a little bit more to go on? I didn't quite understand
well,
the question.
Well, because I guess what I'm trying to say is they're trying to turn us into, you know, the slaves of their machine, and they're doing it algorithmically. So, and they're controlling our movements and our communication and this and that. So our history is no longer going to be, you know, how human beings get together and they make decisions,
right,
or they fight or they do things. Now, all that is going to be determined by a program that they use along with the power that they have out in the world to make us behave a certain way and create this history that is sort of determined by their software and their AI. And so what does that say about them as humans who are like us organic beings, but they want most of the world, the rest of the human beings who are not in their strata to... To be what? To be slaves
drone
inside
serfs.
Their AI.
Yeah. No, okay, I understand what you're saying. Yeah, you're absolutely right. There's, you know, a chunk of the book, The Bodies of Others, talks about, and I'm a tech CEO now, so I, you know, sadly understand this mindset of other tech CEOs. They want to... And they've succeeded, you know, very profitably in crushing people's ability to not just organically gather and have human space that's not mediated by digital technology. Like, that was the point of the lockdowns, right? The lockdowns did not make a difference medically. They didn't do anything medically good. They, you know, raised suicide rates and depression rates, and they crushed economies. But what they did was fantastic for tech companies by preventing human beings from gathering to worship or gathering in in-person schooling or, you know, gathering in small mom and pop shops. Big tech is up, you know, company after company, and I showed charts in The Bodies of Others, by at least 20% net revenue over the last 2 years. So Nintendo is up because kids can't play together, you know, freely. Their parents are freaked out. You know, Microsoft is up. They make the vaccine passports, and Bill Gates has invested in the vaccines. Google is up. Google owns Baseline, where you have to sign in to get a PCR test at CVS. You know, Amazon is up because all those little stores were crushed for 6 months, and no one can hang on for 6 months without revenue except big institutional investors or big box stores like Target and Walmart, who acquired all their market share. But Amazon certainly acquired all the market share of all those little companies that were crushed. Etsy, right? What a weird brand. You know, it used to aggregate all the tiny craftspeople. Well, you crush the ability of the tiny craftspeople to compete with you, and Etsy is, you know, gigantic, up 20% net revenue. So, you know, I talk about meal kits that didn't even exist really as an industry before the pandemic, and now are, you know, multi-million dollar profit drivers for tech investors who are the ones invested in the meal kits. And same thing with education technology. You know, you make it miserable by masking people for people to go to university classes. It makes an otherwise loser industry like distance learning, you know, now profitable in the hundreds of millions of dollars. So big tech was very successful, but in embracing the messaging around this pandemic. And, you know, you notice that most of your information about how big it was and how dangerous it was and the variants and so on, you know, didn't come from your own lived experience, or bodies piling up in the street. It came from digital platforms. It came from your perception of the world on the internet, basically, because you were locked in your home. So tech is, you know, has succeeded in dissolving churches, dissolving relationships, dissolving, you know, long-standing community activities and histories. So now let's talk about AI. A really true thing you just said is that they, you know, these tech bros, in alignment with World Economic Forum, in alignment with China and the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation, you know, really do want to drive history based on artificial intelligence algorithms, because that way they can control history. And a huge part of that is also propaganda. And I talk about how now AI has the ability to kind of tell the same story far beyond the scale of human editors or human propagandists, right? All around the world in different, you know, different languages simultaneously. And that's what we saw with the pandemic, like the same memes, you know, don't hug your grandma, you'll kill her. That was in Hindi and it was in Urdu and it was in English and it was in French, you know, all at the same time. You know, by the same token, when you saw the word myocarditis, you would see the phrase extremely rare preceding it every single time. Well, a human editor, you know, 1,000 human editors can't scale that the way AI can by just inserting that phrase. So, you know, you propagandize people successfully enough, you deplatform people who are raising questions about the narrative, like me. You know, I reported on menstrual dysregulation from the vaccine in March of 2021 and was thoroughly deplatformed and attacked and smeared probably by Twitter spokespeople, you know, but in multiple news outlets around the world that I'd been writing for decades, right? It was super striking. Well, AI can do that, you know, so you deplatform people who raise questions. And then you track and surveil people, right? Because when you drive people onto digital platforms, instead of letting them gather in an office or gather in a university, you can surveil them and you can track them. And if you have a vaccine passport, you certainly can surveil and track them very, very easily. You can switch them off. If they're dissidents, you can switch them on if they're compliant. And that way you have a whole new thing in human history, which is, you know, history that's not being generated organically by the free will of millions of people in free societies, granted that in closed societies, you know, history is fairly easy to direct. But now for the first time, you really have AI algorithms determining historical outcomes and really very few people deciding.
Determining global history all at once, you know, as opposed to,
right.
Okay, this is a totalitarian society and they're trying to control their people. This is a global totalitarian historic event, you know. I have to take a break right now, but we'll be back. I just want to remind my audience that at TNT Radio, we're always here. We're committed to bringing you our take on the biggest topics of our time, day and night. We broadcast 24/7, live, online, globally, no matter what. We've got you covered on TNT Radio. We'll be right back with Naomi Wolf.
You should hear what Rick Munn's talking about.
You know what? You know, this whole business, I mean, like, I thought about you actually when I read this. I was immediately thinking of places that were 40 degrees or above, all right? And there's various places in the world that top that temperature regularly. And millions upon millions upon millions upon millions upon millions of people live there, okay? And notice, by the way, we're told in the UK it could top 40 degrees maybe one day this week. So it's not like we're going to be plunged into Arizona-esque temperatures for the next 3 to 6 months. We might have one day where the temperature tops 40. And let me say, it's probably in some remote weather station somewhere. It happens in one place for like 1 minute of the day.
Rick Munn is locked and loaded on today's News Talk, TNT Radio.
Affordable housing, we can build that. Sustainable housing, we can build that. At MIT Modular, we understand the importance of housing for all and the importance of design, cost, and functionality. Our goal is to meet the needs of our growing population by converting shipping containers to livable units. If you're like-minded and in a position to invest in something meaningful and life-changing, we want to hear from you. We are a team of professional architects, engineers, and financial and tax experts dedicated to offering unique solutions that provide a brighter future. Our Opportunity Zone Fund offers investors both real estate and operating business diversification, 5-year tax deferral on capital gains, annual tax benefits, and ultimately tax-free appreciation potential. There are Opportunity Zones all over America. If you're interested in learning more about our services, need affordable housing, or want to participate in creating a new vision for tomorrow, give us a call in the U.S. on 385-985-5702. Or read more at mitmodular.com. MIT Modular. We can build that.
Telling the truth is the only mandate we believe in. Today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
I'm back with best-selling nonfiction writer Naomi Wolf, who has written a must-read book, and I really mean go out and buy that book. I'm not marketing it. I just think you should know what she wrote about. It's titled The Bodies of Others, The New Authoritarians, COVID-19, and The War Against Humans. I took notes on this book. I took 68 pages worth of notes because what was amazing to me was how you detailed so sharply how they are literally killing human culture with various isolation techniques, with the masks also is an isolation technique as well. I would like you to talk about everything from destroying families to forcing people to avoid real life experiences and live life digitally, etc. Because I want you to talk about all those in as much detail as you can, because I really think, too, that what this does is it makes way. You talked about the 2049 generation. That's the generation of kids who have missed out on a decent education and so on because of all this. I think they're actually trying to formulate a new human, to reprogram humans so that they want to be isolated.
Right. I think you're right about that. You're anticipating actually an essay that I'm writing just now. Well, a couple of things have happened since The Bodies of Others was published. I found a smoking gun in the sense that I've got 3,000 experts, medical and scientific experts, reading the Pfizer documents, the 55,000 documents released under court order that the FDA asked the judge to keep hidden for 75 years. And what they found is just a catastrophic scale of harms. But also, I knew I was looking at an act of war from the scale of the deaths and the destruction and the, you know, human damage that are confirmed in these documents. But I also found the smoking gun, which is BioNTech, which is Pfizer's branch that makes the mRNA vaccine, partnered with the Chinese Communist Party to produce them globally. And Fosun Pharmaceuticals in Shanghai, run by a very senior CCP member, is the instrument that there's 100% tech transfer to China at the end of 2021, reported in the SEC filings for BioNTech. So everyone who gets the mRNA vaccine now in 2022, and they're going after our kids, is getting something that the tech is owned by China, basically the formula, the manufacturing process. And Fosun Pharma now has Fosun Pharma USA in Boston, Massachusetts, and in Princeton, New Jersey, manufacturing not just the mRNA injections, but the Pfizer and Merck COVID pill, including Paxlovid, which Dr. Birx is promoting, which the president is now taking. They're also manufacturing the PCR tests and the antigen tests, which are the only metric that, you know, demonstrates that there even is a pandemic or what the scale of it is, and that therefore industries should close or schools should close and so on. China's creating all of this, and we're seeing people dropping dead. You know, we're seeing babies going into seizures. We're seeing young adults with heart damage that will kill them in 5 or 10 years at an absolutely massive scale. And also the Pfizer documents show that the great majority of these adverse events are in North America, the United States specifically, the second largest group in Western Europe, and all the other 56 countries where this injection rolled out only amounts to 7,000 adverse events. So, and I also found from the Pfizer documents that you can adjust, that you can take people out basically very, very easily by just adjusting the brand, with Moderna being 3 times more lethal than Pfizer, or by adjusting the dilution, or by adjusting the temperature, because leaving the vials out of cold storage for more than 2 hours, because these lipid nanoparticles solidify in room temperature and in body temperature. So this is a massive attack on the West by China, or a massive attack using China. The World Economic Forum perhaps using China as an instrument to kill us, you know, to take us out. It's an act of war. And I guess I'm sorry, am I answering your question? I actually forgot. You know, this is such an important message that I forgot where I was going.
Well, the bottom line here is I was saying that it looks to me.
Oh, are they making a new person? Right. So yes, tragically, I was going to write about, and this is really hard for me to write about because people I love are vaccinated. But in addition to the physiological harms, there's also something very weird happening cognitively to human beings. We do know, my experts have found that the mRNA injections change DNA. You know, we were told that they didn't, but they do. And also there's this horrific rat study out of Hong Kong. So, of course, overseen by the CCP in 2021, that shows that progressive injections enlarge the heart, create visible white spots on the heart, damage the liver, create cytokine storms, right? Progressive into the bloodstream. Right. So that should explain to you why it's boosters, boosters, boosters. But my point about changing humans is that a lot of people are noticing that people who are vaccinated have personality changes. That they're much more rigid in their thinking, for instance, or inclined to explosive rages, just very icy, you know, very willing to cut off relationships and say, well, I can't be in contact with people who have values that are not my values. Well, I'm really thinking a lot about these lipid nanoparticles in human emotions because I've also kind of noticed that it sounds very metaphysical, but I'm just sharing what's, my latest thinking, being in crowds, like crowds in New York where everyone's vaccinated, right? Or in 80% of people are vaccinated. It really doesn't feel the same as it used to. And specifically, you can't pick up human energy in the same way. Like the energy field is just almost not there.
That's so interesting that you say that. When I go to New York now, New York used to be a place, the minute you got there, you could feel this incredible energy everywhere in the streets, everywhere. It was like a shot of espresso coffee. It's gone.
Right. It's gone. It's totally gone. And so it's like a city of ghosts now. Like they're there, you see them, but you can't feel them. And I also... I've also noticed, and other people have said this, like human beings recognize each other through scent, especially moms, right? There are all these studies that show that you can pick out your child, mammals can pick out their cub or whatever from a million other cubs, or you can recognize your boyfriend from his t-shirt, whatever. Like humans have a signature scent pattern. And a lot of people who are not vaccinated are confirming, and this is my experience, that people don't have no scent anymore. Like you can't smell them. I'm not saying like they don't smell bad or they don't smell, like I'm not talking about deodorant. I'm saying they don't smell like there's a human being in the room, and they don't feel like there's a human being in the room. And when you hug them, you barely get, like there's a reason humans hug each other, right? We're like these engines of warmth and emotional support from touch. And you get that through that heart-to-heart connection. That's why people embrace. Well, a lot of people are noticing that when they hug vaccinated people, it's like they're barely there. They're like wisps. You don't get that heart connection. So I've really been thinking about these lipid nanoparticles because there are so many things we barely understand. Like human beings are electromagnetic beings, right? Mammals are. Yep. And we emit, like waves. I mean, this is how like EKGs work. It's how, it's not a mystery. It's not a crazy thing to say. Well, these lipid nanoparticles are designed to cross every membrane in the human body and to go through the bloodstream, and they're lodging in organs, right? Well, we don't know what that does to the human heart or the human brain. Right? They're crossing into the brain. Maybe there's a wavelength, which is love, that this is gumming up the generator that is human love or dialing down its ability to transmit. Maybe there's a healing quality. And a lot of people have talked about this with massage therapy and with, body work and so on. You know, when people put hands on people, they can heal them if they've got certain gifts. Well,
yes.
You know, maybe these lipid nanoparticles are just disrupting or dialing down or ruining the ability of people to really bond and connect with each other, to help each other, to heal each other, to, give each other those good endorphins that you get from hugging another human being or a handshake or a kiss or a snuggle. I really am wondering about that because that's how these lipid nanoparticles work, right? They go into the brain, they go into the heart, and they kind of gum it up. It may well have an effect on making humans more isolated and less needing of each other.
Well, the other thing, too, is the more there is an expectation, you create an expectation of, okay, I have to wear a mask every day, or the expectation of, well, I'm working remotely now. I can right. work remotely permanently. And so people get accustomed to these things.
Exactly.
And then they change. They change internally and externally, you know?
Absolutely. And so, I'm seeing it. I mean, I'm seeing it. Like I've young people I manage, and I'll say, okay, go out and get a story, go, you know, talk to people on the street, go into a club, go travel. And they look at me like I'm from Mars, you know, that we've dehabituated them to leaving their computers and leaving their homes and being, you know, having new experiences IRL in real life.
Yeah. So the level of endorphins and all that people get from each other when they assemble, maybe they'll just become used to not having it. In other words, maybe you and I are part of are dinosaurs. We're going to be extinct.
Well, you can say it. I mean, that's exactly the conclusion I came to. They don't care about us, right? These evildoers. We're going to die. You know, we're done. Like, we remember what freedom is like. We remember that jolt of, 8 million people in the streets of New York. We know what's wrong. We remember birthday parties. We remember symphonies, right? They are waiting for us to die, right? They're really focused on, and this is why my book is dedicated to the 2049 generation. They're focused on the kids, and they want to raise these kids with an aversion to being around other human beings because you have to wear a mask, right? Or you have to be 6 feet apart. You have to be surveilling yourself to not touch and not have fun and not be spontaneous. They want to condition them. And I see this in my 11-year-old stepson's generation. You know, they want to condition them to be more comfortable interacting with their phones with other human beings than in a playground or in a slumber party. Absolutely, they want that because we are far easier to control and because we're also more obedient. And, you know, we're depressed. We're isolated. We're, not able. I mean, when people don't go to offices anymore, when they work remotely, there's a whole wealth of new experience, new alliances they're not getting, right? They're completely dependent on their existing networks or on whatever shows up digitally.
Wow. It's almost, I would call it Orwello fascism, because it's both of those things married together, holding hands, you know, getting closer and closer to being the complete thing. It's, but by the same token, there has been some good news in various quarters. Could you talk mm-hmm. about that?
Sure. I think I know what you mean. There have been some good lawsuits in the United States. For instance, a lawsuit forced the state of Illinois to stop coercing, mandating the injections for college students, and I think for school-age students as well. There was a lawsuit, and actually, it's actually lawyers that we've since hired at Daily Clout to sue Pfizer and the FDA. They had a successful lawsuit suing the Biden administration to drop forcible masking of people on public federal transportation like planes. Here in New York State, our tyrannical governor keeps trying to bypass the state assembly and create Board of Health regulations that will allow her to drag people off into quarantine camps. And this keeps being overturned by judges. Honestly, judges are the last line of defense when it comes to, you know, our liberties here in the United States. We at Daily Clout ran something called the Five Freedoms Campaign and managed to pass bills in about 33 states to forbid vaccine passports. And there was a huge drive state by state from pharma and hospitals and so on and big tech to enforce vaccine passports. In France, they just pushed back against vaccine passports successfully. In Germany, the German Ministry of Health has acknowledged, really shocking, that 1 in 5,000 people who's been injected has had a serious adverse event. So that's a little bit of truth emerging. And I guess to me, a big mark of success, at least in terms of my work every day, trying to warn people about what I see in the Pfizer documents is, and what I found in the bodies of others, is the fact that, you know, they keep doing this huge propaganda blitz to get kids injected and babies injected with these mRNA vaccines. And people are not biting. I think at most 20% of parents have done it. I think that's an exaggeration. I don't think those numbers are real.
I'll tell you what.
I think people are having second thoughts. Yes.
I live here in New Jersey, and nobody's wearing a mask, except, you know, a few people here and there, but nobody's wearing a mask. I went on vacation to Europe, didn't have to wear a mask in the plane, didn't have to wear a mask anywhere when I got there. I went to the UK, Spain. So I also think that there, even among the vaccinated, people are just starting, because they keep changing their position on what the vaccines do. It used to be you can't get COVID at all, and then when that didn't work out because people were getting COVID, it's like, well, it mitigates the severity of the illness and so on and so forth. But I think that a lot of people are starting, because the propaganda campaign was so outrageously fraudulent. And I think a lot of people are waking up to that.
I hope you're right.
You know, and
I'm getting
but
tired.
I'm just worried. No, I really, I mean, here in New Jersey, actually, people in New Jersey, you know, Jersey is a pretty corrupt state, but it's hard to push New Jerseyans around. So they were never really super big. Or when I went to New York, it was like Naziville. But here in where I live, you know, it wasn't like that. So, but I guess what I'm wondering is, monkeypox is here. What's around the corner, do you think? Because I don't think we've heard the last. They keep trying to inoculate the kids. That's the big, big focus now. And I think it's because you're right. We're going to die off pretty soon. Focus on the kids. What do you think is going to be, if the past is prologue, what is the future in terms of their activities, do you think?
Well, you know, I think it's very predictable. Bill Gates has said there's going to be more and more pandemics. That, you know, that's their plan. There have been some real victories. The WHO tried to get a treaty going at the end of May that would, like, drain nations of sovereignty and send a kind of SWAT team with every rollout of every pandemic, you know, to do whatever they want to us, basically. So I kind of hope and pray that people will ignore the rollouts of one drama after another. I mean, the bottom line with human beings is that, I interviewed a former insider at the CDC, and he said at the CDC they were told, we need a new virus every 2 years in order to get funding. And he said, well, how do you guarantee a new virus? And they said, well, that's easy. There are like 2,500 viruses. You just showcase one of them. You know,
oh, my God.
2 years. Right. And I think that's where we're at, right? I mean, so I just hope people get bored the way they got bored with 12 years of the global war on terror. You know, like, terrorism is a real thing, but people kind of caught on to the fact that the danger was being exaggerated or hyped, or, you know, isolated cases were being misreported, or people were being entrapped and so on. So I really advise my loved ones not to read the New York Times, not to watch NPR, you know, not to watch MSNBC, to really switch off the worst propagandists of the kind of pharma fear porn complex. And I mean, all I can do is hope and pray. You know, this is why I wrote The Bodies of Others. People understand that these waves of propaganda are really just there to make them quiescent and to submit. And, you know, these people do not have our best interests at heart in terms of public health or in any other way.
Well, I definitely think people realize if you know, they're vaccinated up the wazoo and they get COVID once, they get COVID twice, even though they've been vaccinated, that's kind of a rubber meets the road high sign that you're not being told the truth. We're going to take a little break. We'll be right back. This is TNT Radio.
Guess what? The Great Reset as a name is not faring too well. It's time for a new marketing strategy.
From Washington, D.C., this is the Morano Minute with your host, TNT Radio's Mark Morano.
You knew it had to happen. When The Great Reset was test marketed, apparently audiences think it's a flop. So the global elites have a new phrase they're working on, and we're about to let you hear it.
What's important is that it's defined by those who react, and those who react need to be broad-based to send the message that the rules-based order will be defended. Rules-based order.
At this summit, we rallied our alliances to meet both the direct threats of Russia poses to Europe and the systemic challenges that China poses to a rules-based world order. To a rules-based world order.
That's right, a rules-based global order. They're trying to trick you by not mentioning the Great Reset anymore. Don't be fooled. A rules-based global order is the Great Reset in drag. Stay aware, keep fighting, and join the Great Resist. This is Mark Morano for the Morano Minute on TNT Radio.
The strength of our country hasn't just been won on the battlefield. It's won every day in our communities when we come together in our toughest times. For over 100 years, the American Legion has been strengthening communities across our nation by providing life-saving help and support to our veterans and neighbors during times like we're facing today. We are the American Legion, Veterans Strengthening America. To learn how you can help, visit legion.org.
For the news and views you can't hear anywhere else.
You guys are talking about everything that I just wanted to ask about.
This is Today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
I'm back with writer Naomi Wolf, who has written the must-read book titled The Bodies of Others, The New Authoritarians, COVID-19, and the War Against Humans. You know, when you wrote that chapter on the spiritual dimension of this, I was so struck by it, because one of the things that struck me in the body of the book was how you broke down how they're saying that to save the community, you have to isolate yourself. But the community is what gives you life. So, you know, it's sort of like it's like we had to destroy the village to save it. It's like we have to kill everything that's human about us to save what makes us human.
Right, well
and
put.
And it was just, oh my God. But then I have to read this, Naomi, because I think that the way you put it was so amazing. You wrote, "In the magnitude of the evil around us, in its awe-inspiring level of darkness and inhumanity, in the policies aimed at killing children's joy, restricting their breath, speech, and laughter, at killing ties between families and extended families, at killing churches and synagogues and mosques, and from the highest levels, from the president's own bully pulpit, demanding people to collude in excluding, rejecting, dismissing, shunning, hating their neighbors and loved ones and friends. In all of this, the presence of such rampant, elemental evil, I felt a darkness beyond anything human. I don't think humans are smart or powerful enough to have come up with this horror all alone." Talk about that last line.
It's hard for me to talk about this because it's, you know, I was trained or educated to in a secular context as an intellectual, and we're not supposed to talk about, you know, Satan. But I really, and I'm Jewish, you know, we don't have a really well developed notion of the satanic, right? I mean, you know, Hashatan or Hashatan shows up in the Old Testament, but it kind of makes an appearance, you know, here and there. It's not like, you know, the Prince of Darkness, like in the New Testament, you know, showing up to tempt people in the same way, but it's not like Milton's Satan. All of that being said, I looked and looked and looked at what happened to us in the last 2 years from every perspective using my education, and it did not make sense on just a human level. I know bad politics. I've studied history. Even the worst human beings with the worst of intentions all by themselves really could not accomplish a global, synchronized crushing of so much that's good in the world and so much that connects us to God. You know, the crushing of families, the dividing of communities, the pressure for people to embrace discrimination after we had done away with discrimination, at least, you know, legally for the last, I don't know, 40 or 50 years. You know, the suppressing children's breathing, the, you know, instruction to children to not play together, the you know, forcing of a medical experiment into people's bodies, you know, that comes right out of the Nazi era, the forcing of people against their will, the dissolving of houses of worship, the arrests of ministers, you know, for holding worship services. I mean, you know, and all these lies proliferating around the world in the same cadence, in the same voice almost. It just, even with the explanation of AI, it did not make sense to me that humans could accomplish it. Among other reasons, because humans, you know, fight among themselves when it's just bad people trying to, you know, seize all the power. So I really reluctantly had to conclude. And there was just something kind of like sadistic about it on a very, very grand scale. So I really had to conclude that Satan's real and that evil is real, and that I was seeing, you know, something that was helped along by a cosmic scale of evil, right? That alone could accomplish something so monumental and so dark. And also by the same token, I kind of paradoxically concluded that God must exist. You know, I just started to believe in God in a more literal way, because this massive evil has to be directed at something good. You know, and yeah, that's what I saw. They want to create a world, or it wants to create a world in which we are not connected to all the ways in which God enters our lives.
It's so funny that I hadn't read your book before I did this, because a couple weeks ago, I actually brought an exorcist onto my Whistleblower Newsroom show to answer exactly that question. Why is there so much evil in the world? I really felt like some of this has got to be metaphysical, because it's so deep and it's so big. Yeah. You know, so when I saw I was actually relieved, because I was very nervous about doing that show, because I was thinking, oh, people are going to think Christina's off the reservation.
I bet they loved it. Everyone wants to talk about this. I'm surprised at that too. Everyone wants to talk about it.
I know. And I think about it. And I think, you know, there's something about power when it as an energy, when it expands to a certain bigness, as it were, that it becomes, I guess you can say, satanic or evil or however you want to put it. And that reminds me of something you mentioned in your book, that the model, you know, computer modeling is making history, our history now, instead of organic history. But you also talked about the Milgram experiment, that this is kind of the model for what happened here.
Yeah, I mean, it's the model, I guess. I mean, Nazism is the model for what happened here.
Yes. Sure. Well, and that's part, you know, that's part of it too. If you're constantly being told, you know, if you shock this person, ever more, you have to do it. People will do that. And that's right. That's part of the, and that's sort of the mindset that has been persecuting the unvaccinated, right?
Right. Yeah. Yes, exactly. Yeah. You know, our patience is wearing thin. It's very, yes. I mean, it's like a demonstration of the Milgram experiments. Yeah.
I mean, I want to talk about the persecution of the unvaccinated for a minute. I'm, you know, full disclosure, I'm not vaccinated either.
And it's none of my business, but thank you. Thank you for telling me. I don't care.
Well, right, the reason ahead. Why is mm-hmm. because I keep running into political situations or situations where I'm made to feel like I'm some kind of a pariah for it, you know?
Right.
And even though it's very frustrating to me personally, because as a journalist, I have done from the very beginning all kinds of interviews mm-hmm. with all kinds mm-hmm. of physicians and people, you know, treating COVID patients, actually dealing with vaccine injuries, et cetera. Mm-hmm. And it's like, nobody wants to hear it. Nobody wants to, you know, not nobody, but, you know, a lot of people don't want to hear it or see it. And I'm just wondering, when does that level of persecution become actionable? You know, I'm really wondering that these days. Because
yeah,
it's hard to be attacked.
You should get a lawyer. Yeah, you should get a lawyer. I mean, all of this should be persecutable, right? All of it is wrong. All of it is unlawful. I mean, we have 250 volunteer lawyers, and they see a range of civil and criminal offenses in what's happening. And, you know, we're not going to get our world back unless we all say this is wrong. You know, it's criminal. We're going to take action appropriately.
Well, I'll tell you what, if any of your lawyers start a class action suit on behalf of the unvaccinated, let me know, because to constantly be subjected to this propaganda, to limitations that are fraudulent because there are control mechanisms, et cetera. It's mm-hmm. and of course it's global. I mean, this could be an international,
right?
An international suit. But anyway, we don't have very much time left. I would like you to just talk about what makes you hopeful right now about the current situation and what you think people have and haven't learned from this experience up to now.
Unfortunately, you're talking to me at a moment where I happen to be kind of uncharacteristically worn out and tired of fighting for a humanity that doesn't really seem to want to fight for itself. So I'm sure I'll get a second wind. My husband, who spent 12 years in the military, says that this is battle fatigue, because we've been fighting and fighting and fighting for 2 years. And, you know, I'm sure he's right. And I'm sure that, you know, I'll get a second wind. But I'm very disappointed in Americans. You know, like, yes, thousands have joined us in standing up and speaking out, but millions haven't, you know, especially people who are, like, I'm especially disappointed in my tribe. I come from the right on progressive left, and the wreckage of those ideals and morals is painful to me every single day. You know, people who would never discriminate against anyone on the basis of race or, you know, sexual orientation ever, or religion are happy to discriminate on the basis of your medical status and my medical status, which is, again, nobody's business. So I've lost a huge amount of faith in a huge number of people, and a huge amount of respect for a huge number of people. My own, like, Jews are supposed to stand up against discrimination. I can't believe how many, you know, my own synagogue like broke up with me because I kept saying people who want to should be allowed to meet in person and pray. So anyway, I'm not as hopeful as I might be if you spoke to me at another time. When honestly, finding the smoking gun that I described, finding that these mRNA injections are distributed by China and people are going to keep dying, is kind of an overwhelming thing to process. I guess I am hopeful that, I mean, it really comes down to God, right? I mean, if it's just up to us, we're screwed.
I don't see any hope. I'm going to tell you something. I'm going to tell you that you should take a much needed rest, and I'm going to tell you that a lot more people are with you than you think. And I will tell you that a lot of some of those people are, they're not just in the law, they're also in law enforcement. And that's very important.
That is important.
Too.
That is important.
So chin up, Naomi.
All
take
right.
a rest.
Well, God bless them.
And,
uh-huh.
and we'll keep this going. We'll keep this going.